So I thought this one might be a little downer. Like, the KF just gave us a standard press conference. Very respectful, but nothing flashy in what he said about Ohio State or this weekend's matchup. He gave us a nugget or two, though. And David and I go deep. We dive all the way back to 2020 for some references. And we actually went 40 minutes of in-depth talk about this Buckeye matchup. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Honestly, this is only my first one. I'm behind today. I had ounces of water this morning, Tyler.
Holy smokes.
Before the coffee.
Wow. This guy is healthy.
I know.
Skin looks great.
Prepared, day by day.
Prepared for Ohio State week. Welcome in, everybody, to the Press Review Show. It's not going to be as fun as last week or as long as last week. I felt like this was such a... it wasn't a downer. KF gave what he normally gives. But like after last week talking to the coordinators, Lester, Parker, Woods.
It was just so incredibly monotone.
There wasn't a lot of excitement to it. I'm not going to forge any hype here. I have a couple notes. I don't think anything was as fun as last week. It is funny to me when he makes like these little small jokes about like, is it the Power Four now? Are we Power Four? Like he does like just
pay attention to it.
Yeah. Or like talking about the spreads. Like he doesn't know the spreads. I don't know if he doesn't know the spreads or not. I would guess he actually doesn't. So like, I would assume we're underdogs in this game. We're playing a top five team.
Well, I was kind of curious when you went down that rabbit hole, if he was going to make a couple jokes about the gambling investigation last year, or if he was going to like just tip him off about it again, which, by the way, let's recap that for a second. KF was exactly right the entire time.
As far as
how
what?
Iowa was just Iowa being targeted and how BS the investigation was.
Yeah. I think we did. We mention it on an episode.
Campbell.
Yeah. What a weird situation that was. I remember we did a podcast, and I'm pretty sure I don't remember the name of the guy now, but like they found the emails, they found the communication between whoever was a part of this department.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if that guy still has his job. I don't know if that guy like, but it is wild that happened. I would imagine it's not a lot of public news anymore, but I don't think that guy's life is probably going well. Legally, because I think that whole case is still going on, right? Like those.
Yeah, this is going to be something I still think is going to be pushed forward for months to come. But I also don't think a lot of us are going to keep up with it just because
it's old news.
We kind of know. I mean, what it's just basically waiting for the court to decide what happens or if they end up suing. But it was just what a weird situation. And the fact that they kept pushing it for Noah Shannon and all of that. I mean, you and I could probably tee off about that for a long time, but
I feel maybe the worst for Noah. He was like probably the most affected, right?
Well, him and Hunter Deckers, but Hunter Deckers also bet on himself, and like,
which is like honestly, like if you're, I mean that's starting to get into the nuanced details of like what bets you're making, but I don't know. I feel like you should be able to do that. I don't know. I feel like you should be able to say, "Oh, Hunter Deckers passing."
I'm going to rock the over. Imagine just seeing quarterbacks audible out of everything and just go straight to passing the entire time.
It's like this guy made a lot of checks to pass plays. It seemed like he was like he threw it 53 times. Seems like maybe this guy was going for the over for alternate reasons.
Yeah, KF also said he didn't want to throw the ball 60 times against Ohio State because if they end up doing it, probably know what the result is.
Yeah, he said basically word for word. He's like, I hope we don't have to throw the ball 60 times against these guys. I got a pretty good feeling what the result is going to be. Okay. Which is interesting to me because the first thing I thought of was 2020 and how they threw it 54 times against Northwestern.
God, and I forgot about that game.
I'm pretty sure I mean, that's with Brian at the helm of the offense, and I don't think Brian was necessarily like a big throw guy. I'm actually going to bring that game up.
I think I remember, because I remember we asked him. They threw the ball like 82 times in the first two games, both of which were losses in 2020.
Man, 21-20 is what that game ended up. What a disaster.
What was that Nate Stanley game where he threw the ball about 50 times? That was at Penn State, wasn't it? It was like in the rain and all of that.
Here's the box score stats from that game. 1 minute. Here we go. Peyton Ramsey, Spencer Petras. Spencer Petras was 26 of 50. Jared Goff was 18 of 18 last night, two nights ago.
Perfect. Didn't even get the game ball.
Pretty funny. Dan Campbell's like, oh, man, I feel bad. I just gave the game ball to somebody else. Off. I mean, what an awful 26 of 50. For, you want to take a guess at how many yards? 50 passing attempts, 26 completions. How many yards?
Let's go 238.
216. One touchdowns, three interceptions.
Oh, probably had something to do. Game.
Goodson had 13 carries. A team had, if you take out Spencer Petras' carries, we had 18 carries. 18 carries, 50 passing plays. That was bad. I don't know what we were trying to do there, but that was bad. It's not like we were down. Oh my God, it's actually worse. It's actually worse. We were up 17-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that. They got off to that red hot start. I think that's when Tyrone Tracy broke a huge
play in
that game.
And we had 18 run? We had 18 run plays. It doesn't even make sense in hindsight, knowing the way Iowa football plays.
Yeah.
How do we have 18 rushing plays in an entire game when you're up 17?
What were the scoring plays in that game? Do you have the ESPN up from that?
Yeah. Okay, don't go to that. You know what I hate about websites is when they load and then the advertisement
just takes over the whole page.
Loads over it right as you click into what you want to click so that you click the advertisement. Oh my God. Okay, scoring play. 4 minutes into the game, Spencer Petras passed to Brandon Smith, 7-yard touchdown.
Okay.
They fumbled 5 plays into their next drive. 3-play drive, 45 yards. Tyler Goodson, 15-yard run for a touchdown. They go 3 and out. They punt. We have a 13-play drive. This is all in the first quarter still. 5 minutes left in the first quarter. 13-play drive. They ended up stopping us at the 3-yard line. And Keith kicks a 22-yard field goal. And then
pick six.
And nothing happens until they score. They go on a 16-play drive with 6 minutes left in the second quarter. They finally score a touchdown, 3-yard run. We get another field goal at the end of the half. They get a touchdown, 14-play drive. God, they put together two massive drives at the end of that half. I mean, what a weird game. This has nothing to do with the press review show.
No, I brought it up.
It is interesting to go down the stats and the play-by-plays. Not to take you guys who are listening down a road you didn't want to go, probably one of the most that's probably one of the most coulda, shoulda, woulda games in the last 5 years.
It also set up that next game, though, which is arguably one of the biggest must-win games in KF's career, in my opinion, because if they go 0-3 to start the 2020 after all the stuff in the offseason, I think the train just completely derails. And that's when they blew out Michigan State the next
week. Yeah, we lost to Purdue the first week, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Then Northwestern in a, dude, you should have won that game. And then everyone's like, oh my God, are we going to be able to beat Michigan State? And
they won like 45-7, I think.
Like that, somehow we completely turned it around. And I still don't know how to quantify that year because it was 2020. People didn't even get to practice. They didn't even know they were playing until like 11 days before this game.
Fake season.
Totally fake season. I don't think anything matters. I don't think any of it matters. What does matter is
Ohio State.
We lost this Northwestern game before I move on quickly, and it ended up being the deciding factor of who went to the Big Ten championship game in 2020.
So, yeah, and then Michigan just opted out of the game because Iowa was going to play Michigan.
Yep, and then Missouri in the bowl game both opted out. So
yeah, I know KF was torqued off about that because I think Missouri sent everybody home.
Yeah.
And then they all came back, and that's when they got COVID.
Torqued off.
I don't know. First, yeah, this is why I need 2 cups of coffee before water.
Next week, can you ask him at the press conference? Can you say, Coach, just did a podcast with Kluver last week. We were talking about a couple things. We're just wondering what torques you off the most.
Probably cut blocking.
That probably is that in the changing landscape of college football.
Everything.
Yeah, he said he doesn't want to throw the ball 50 times this game. We'll get back to Ohio State here. He probably smart considering that you have the second best running back in college football. And it's crazy that I have to say second best because of what Caleb Johnson's doing. But Ashton Jeanty's
I looked at his odds. Somebody posted his odds for touchdown scores next game.
Yeah.
To score one touchdown, Tyler, it's minus 3,500.
Wow.
I believe. And I think to score three, it's minus 140.
It's minus touchdown. He's got minus odds for a three touchdown.
That's what, unless it's an altered ticket, and I don't think it is. That's why I saw somebody this morning.
You know what's crazy about him is he's had three games where he's exploded. The second game they played, he didn't score any touchdowns.
Yeah, it was that Portland State. I think they benched him at half because they were blowing him out so bad.
He had six in the first game and then like four and three or something like that. Unbelievable. Kid's insane. Fun to see Caleb answer a question about him. He's like, yeah, that man's going crazy. Yeah. And then they're like, yeah, it's my turn now. I hope it is Caleb's turn. And throwing the ball 50 times would be detrimental towards using Caleb because we're likely not going to get a ton of plays. We're not going to run 100 plays on offense in this game. So we need it to be closer to using some Caleb Johnson. I find it interesting. This actually goes back to last week when we got Tim Lester. Maybe we use a little bit of the fun press conference from last week. Somebody asked him, I don't remember what the question was, but he got around to saying that he would love for the offense to actually be 50-50.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe not a departure, but a slight sway from what Iowa has traditionally considered ideal. Because, and they may have even said this, Brian or KF has maybe even said this before, I think they would rather in the past have leaned 60-40 on the run.
Yeah, that's probably about true. I think they typically still want to run the football. They still want to get about 60-40. I mean, even Kirk, I think, has kind of shifted his mindset that he would like to pass the ball more than in the past. But I mean, that's why I asked him yesterday about the passing timing and how, you know, Tim Lester's comments from last week and
yeah,
and kind of what the players have been saying. And Kirk kind of agreed. Like, he thinks the passing game is close for whatever that's worth. And I, again, to go back to last week too, even Cade felt like it was a lot closer. They said they worked a lot on some of the timing issues because if you're going to beat Ohio State, you need to have your highest upside players and most talented players on the field. Like, I know why Caleb Brown's not getting snaps. Like, when Tim Lester explained that and he was so transparent about that, you and I talked about this a little bit. It made perfect sense to me, especially when you see the way that Iowa football is trying to run. And I even went back and saw the couple times that Caleb Brown's been targeted. There was one throw I will throw on Cade. It was that long play where Caleb walked off the field really upset. I think that was an ill-advised throw by Cade. But the other couple times where Caleb had been targeted, I think Caleb ran the wrong route and the timing is off. I don't really want to pin that on Cade.
Yeah.
And I think every coach we've kind of asked has kind of been on board with that. So it'll be interesting. I think Iowa needs to find a way to get Luke Lachey the football, but I can already tell you what Ohio State's planning on doing. They're putting 9 in the box,
yeah,
and then they're going to try to make Iowa throw the football. And if Iowa's throwing the football 50 times against this Ohio State defense, Cade's throwing a couple picks because they have Caleb Downs back there, who is arguably the best defensive back in college football. Like, as crazy as this sounds, Tyler, I believe this is arguably the most talented Ohio State team in its program history.
Well, then
that's how high I am on them.
Didn't Urban Meyer say something like that at the beginning of the year? They're like projecting the season, and he called it like the most talented roster ever assembled or something. Was that him or somebody has said that?
It might have been Urban, but that does ring a bell. But I mean, I don't think that's crazy to say because, again, you look across the board. I mean, they got probably 6-7 first round guys. Like, this is going to be arguably one of Iowa's toughest games against Ohio State. And on top of that, too, you throw in they're going to Columbus. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. Like, this is why the games are played. This is why it's not mean. I think even going back to the 17 game when Iowa routed them by 31, Tyler, you know that game very well.
Yeah, happened to play.
I think Iowa was a 23 or 24 point underdog going into that game. So Iowa is only a 19.5 point underdog right now. Yeah. And no, I'm kind of curious what your take on that line is too.
It kind of feels like that's the line when Iowa goes up against like a monster, it's always like 20 to 24. Yep. Right.
Yep.
I do think that a couple years ago when we went in there and got embarrassed, you know, one of these games that keeps getting brought up recently, which I do think is relevant. Because Iowa historically, let's go pre-2020, pre the fake season. Historically, and I was part of multiple of these games, throw out the Penn State game in 2016, against ranked teams, we really play well. Like, we cover spreads, we make it closer than it should be on paper, right? You can go through all these games. Sometimes we win the damn football game.
Yep.
That was what we kind of hung our hat on for a while. And then you look at last year and you've got probably the most embarrassing stat from last year, which is we did not score a single point against a ranked opponent. I believe it was Tennessee, Ohio State, and
Michigan.
Or Michigan and Penn State, like 92-0. Not good. And obviously we know that the offense was all-time bad, which we actually got a comment on KF. Again, these little things.
I was about to ask you.
Yep. You have to listen. You have to listen a little bit. And this is something we'll derail here for a second. I'll come back to the spread and how big of an underdog Iowa is here. Let me see here. Oh, yes. KF said, we had some challenges at the quarterback spot last year. Maybe we did a hell of a job of winning 10 games. And this is what I put down. I said, this is my words. He is the shield for his players when things are happening, right? We're now
totally,
post
totally.
We're post hoc. We're hindsight now looking at, he's talking about the 22 season and, or the 23 season. And you could throw in the 22 season in there as well.
Yeah.
At the time, people are pissed at him because he comes out and he says, hey, we like what our guys are doing at practice. Like, he's very vague. He talks about how well they play in practice. He talks about how much confidence they have in him. And people get pissed at him for that. And they say, well, this is BS. Why are we not getting other guys a chance? And then he looks back a year later. He's talking about guys that are no longer our quarterback, Deacon Hill, Spencer Petras, Deacon Hill last year specifically. And he's like, we had some challenges at quarterback. That's KF's way of saying, hey, we fucking sucked at quarterback. And it's interesting to hear him actually say that, like admit we had some challenges. I think he even in another way said we had challenges on the offense in general. At another point in the press conference yesterday, he said he was talking about the offensive line and how they've matured and they're more veteran now. And he's talked about how they, the last couple years, have experienced difficulty and loss. And so something like, and there's been some challenges there as well. So he has his little ways of like finally getting around to admitting what people have wanted him to say the whole time. And I, as a player, call me bias, I love this. This is why his players rally around him so damn hard, is because he's not going to throw you under the bus. He's not going to come out there and say, the old Brian Kelly, we need execution. I'm in favor of maybe the whole offense needs to be executed, right? At the halftime interview that he gave a couple of years ago.
I forgot about that.
Like, he will stand up and he will be the shield from the questions and the criticism while those guys are still in the program week to week trying to play and perform for the program. And then he comes out, and I think this is a prime example of where KF isn't lying to you ever. Sure, he's maybe sugarcoating some things. He's standing up for his guys. But on a hindsight, 1 year later interview, he stands right there and says, we had some challenges at QB. And I just think that's – I like that. I think that's what a head coach should do.
So I think there's a couple sides to this coin, right? One, sure. I don't blame Kirk Ferentz for taking that approach at all. I think it's commendable. I think it makes a lot of sense. And it shows me that two things. One, KF doesn't give a shit about what I say or what fans say or anything like that. And two,
not a single shit.
but he gives a shit about every player in the locker and coach in the locker room.
Yep.
So I think that's completely fair. On the flip side, I think it's completely fair for the fans to be pissed.
I agree.
I think you can't sugarcoat it from that standpoint. The only issue, the thing that is kind of funny to me, just given the context of it, yesterday kind of reminded me, and I kind of smirked at I kind of smiled at Kirk when he said that, because I remember after the Illinois game, when I asked Kirk Ferentz 2 years ago, with the bye week coming up, are you going to make potentially look at making some coaching changes? Because we had seen three coordinators over 10 days in the Big Ten get fired middle of the season. Yeah. So I said that, and Kirk responded with, we won 10 games last year. I don't know if you're aware of that. And that's what it reminded me of, is when I asked him about that.
He came back to the hole. We did a pretty good job winning
10 games. So that's
and you know what? He's not wrong, right?
He's not wrong, but I also think that could be completely looked at from a fan perspective. I mean, like, yeah, you won 10 games, but look how fucking bad your offense was, and are you blind enough that your offense is that bad? But again, they've made changes, and from my standpoint, you do need to give Kirk some grace and credit for it. Now, it's not progressing as quickly as people would like, but again, I think hearing Tim Lester last week explain how many key players were not a part of spring practice and what they're trying to do, I think it's very – it goes back to what we talked about last week. You want to see Iowa progress quicker because of how pressing this season is.
Yeah. For fans and the outside media, everything is quicker than – it's three or four times quicker. You know, we talk about this when we talk about head coaches getting fired.
Yeah.
You know, giving a head coach 2 years. Like, hey, buddy, like, can we get three or four? Like, it takes a while.
This is why I talked about George Barnett. This is the year for George Barnett. There are no excuses that he has to get done. We're actually meeting with him in about 30 minutes, too, so I'm kind of curious to hear what he has to say. But, I mean, look at all the heat that's been taken off George Barnett, and this is why you give coaches – year three is judgment year. Have they taken significant steps forward? And they have so far, from my vantage point.
And KF said that in this press conference about players, too, year three.
Yep.
When specifically talking about – Drew Stevens. And when he said that, I actually took like a little mental note and I went back and thought about my own career. I know Kluver always making him about himself. What a fucking douchebag. Sorry. Who I am. My podcast. Suck it. But I thought about myself. I thought about a lot of my teammates as well. A lot of guys that I played with. And sure, you're going to have like the Ryan Williams, who are just like, you know, he's probably a league receiver at 17 years old down in Alabama.
Crazy.
Yeah, that kid is what he's doing, like physically with his feet and his balance, like
Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, and this guy on Ohio State, also unbelievable. They're the outliers, right? And you're going to find outliers like that when you have five stars. By the way, you started talking about the secondary for Ohio State, and I started to search them. The first one I searched was Caleb Downs. He was a five-star. Turns out he was the number one safety in the country, number one in Georgia, eighth ranked nationally. And I only got through one guy. That was just the first of the four starters that I searched. Yeah. So I'm sure there's a lot of similarity.
Jeremiah Smith was the first wide receiver to ever be number one overall by 24/7 Sports.
Sweet. Quinshon Judkins is elite.
Freak.
And he's not even listed as their first running back because they have Travion.
Freak
Henderson.
So Henderson.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. We're outmatched on paper by a lot at every position, basically. So that's fun. At least, definitely offensively.
People asked me yesterday, like, where's Iowa have the advantage? I think Iowa has three advantages I can think of, right? And I think Iowa's linebackers are better.
Yeah,
like I think Castro, Jackson, and Higgins are the best linebacker trio in college football.
Uh-huh.
In my opinion, I don't think they're the most athletic trio, but I think they're the most productive, and I think they play the best football collectively. And I put money on that. Two, defensive coordinator. I'm trusting Phil Parker. I would take Phil Parker over any defensive coordinator in college football.
Yeah.
And it'll be really fun to watch kind of that chess match between Chip Kelly and Phil Parker. I've been kind of really, really excited about that. And three, I'll give special teams to Iowa.
Yeah, they've picked it up.
Yeah, I think Drew Stevens has been great. Reese Dawkins really had a hell of a turnaround from my eyes. I think obviously some of the coverage breakdowns and stuff, but consistently, I would probably take Iowa special teams over them too. But This might be controversial. I'm probably giving Ohio State the edge at running back simply because they have two megastars.
Yeah. Well, and
that's not dismissing what Caleb can do, because I put Caleb even with either guy. But yeah, since they have two, I'm probably giving Ohio State the edge there.
They have two of them, and not that either team has played like a real. I mean, I guess that's not true. Iowa State's ranked like 16th in the country, and I think they're a legitimately good football
team. I think they're gonna win the Big 12.
Yeah, they're the favorite right now. And if you're gonna take somebody out of that crazy balanced league, I think Iowa State's as good a choice of anybody. And I talked about this with G-Bone yesterday on our podcast. I was like, hey, Iowa fans don't want to hear this, but the team that they might want to root for the most out of Iowa City is just about 2 hours down the road, because if we can, if assuming that paper goes correctly, and then Iowa can make a run at going 10-2, and their two losses are Ohio State and Iowa State, well, you probably want those two teams to be as ranked as high as they possibly can. So unfortunately, you're cheering for the Cyclones to be in the playoff and win the Big 12 championship. That's just the
no
way.
Question.
It is. No question. And so anyway, I'm going to go all the way back real quick. Cause I wanted to go, to you saying there's two sides of it, and you saying it's great and commendable that KF talks that way at the podium. But the fans also have a right to be pissed. I think, yes, I just want to, I'm totally switching back to the subject quick.
Yeah.
I think the fans have a right to be pissed that KF doesn't give them more. I don't think they have a right to be pissed from the standpoint of they then create their own narrative, which they think is correct, of why he's doing that. And it's just simply to protect and shield his players from criticism and be the tip of the spear guy. It's not to lie and try and stand up there and gaslight people that they actually have better players and they're just deciding not to play them. That's why a lot of people get pissed, and you do not have the right to do that. You're just creating stories at that point. Anyway, on the flip side of that, going back to Lester, a lot of things coming back to Lester here. I think it's incredible how transparent and how much he gave us. We talked about this last week, how much he gave us while still not being the throw the guy under the bus. Like, there is a medium there. Like, there's a way that you can do it.
Yeah. I think he was challenging Caleb Brown more than anything else. I don't think he threw him. It was almost like a compliment sandwich, right?
Yeah.
He goes, you know what? We're still working on the timing of things and all that, but we know when the ball is in his hands, he's one of our more dynamic playmakers, and we are going to need him at some point. But he has to continue to work. He has to do this and that.
And you know, sandwich, it never fails.
It was a great way to phrase that, and I think you're exactly right. I think that's fair of you to say about KF too, and that's the problem with, again, I don't think gaslighting is probably the wrong word to a certain degree. I think there are some things to where I'm like, Kirk, I question at times if he understands the gravity of certain statements, and I don't think he does, but again, I will always give Kirk the benefit of the doubt from this standpoint. I think people should too. He will always protect his players above everything else.
Yeah.
I think that's his number one goal going into a presser, but that's one of his top goals. That's why he gives you just enough, but he's so vague to where the other narratives go around. But I hate to say it, Tyler, that's the way it's going to be until, you know, Kirk wants to be more transparent with us. And you know what? Kirk's been doing it long enough, he's been coaching longer than I've been alive. So he's not going to change, and that's fine. But there are just certain pros and cons when it comes to this stuff. And he's chosen his path, and I'm not saying it's a bad one. It's just the one he's chosen.
And it's not even that he's not transparent, because this is what I'm sort of trying to bring up here. It's like he's just transparent a year later when it doesn't when his comments don't affect the morale and the motivation of his current players. They're, you know, the Deacon's now at Utah Tech or whatever. It's like, it's okay if he hears that now. If he hears that we had some real challenges at QB, KF goes out there, you know, last year after that Penn State game. Well, I guess after the Penn State game, it was when Cade was still playing. But he gets up there and he goes, yeah, we just got a lot of challenges at QB right now. And then Deacon's looking at the rest of the year like, oh, good. KF thinks I'm a challenge. Like, and we have 8 games left and I'm still the starter. Like, he's trying to help his players' mentality.
I also think he's kind of checked himself more in that category since the whole Deuce Hogan thing.
Yeah, that was
a long time. There was even yesterday, though, there was a point, I cannot remember who we talked about, but he just said, we have some young guys, and this is no, he goes like, this is no offense to any player or the younger guys, but, yeah. And I think that was a total learning lesson from him stemming from the Deuce Hogan situation after post-Nebraska.
Which Deuce Hogan hasn't amounted to anything, by the way.
I don't think he's even played at New Mexico State this season. Yeah.
So again, it's just all these things that, like, and you can bag on KF and the staff, and I'll be right there with you that I don't know if it's their assessment pre-college of these quarterbacks, or it's just a bunch of unfortunate misses in a row, or it's their development. It's probably a collection of all three. But yes, at the quarterback position, we've been missing, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, we sit there and we're like, well, is Padilla better? Is Labus better? We go out and it's like, look at where all these guys end up and what most of them end up doing at those places. You're like, okay, so they really weren't.
So what does that tell you above everything else? And this is where people should be coming back to. I have two things, but I want you to take it from there and then I'll tell you.
For me, it's the immediate, like, oh, Kirk was right. The staff is right about these guys when they're in the program. They aren't actually better than who we're starting, which then immediately, like, it immediately then shifts me to, hey, but why don't we fucking recruit better guys, right?
I think right now, Iowa's two biggest problems, not biggest, but two of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
Quarterback recruitment.
Yeah.
Quarterback development. Bar none.
Hey, and guess what, though? Timmy Lester.
Now you have a guy. I think it's going to be very interesting when Jimmy Sullivan comes in. I think it'll be interesting to see if they can make James Rosar a quarterback. Because I'll tell you right now, and I'm not trying to.
You think that guy's going to play receiver, don't you?
If James Rosar can learn how to throw the football at a college level, he will be Iowa's most athletic quarterback since Brad Banks.
We're going to have a white Lamar Jackson?
The dude can run, man.
Like, is he the track guy who runs like 10-6?
Yeah, from Florida.
Yeah.
Like, he's an athlete playing quarterback right now.
Okay.
But I also think from my vantage point, I'm thinking that normally wouldn't be a problem right now if you give him a couple years to develop. But given Iowa's track record of developing quarterbacks recently,
right?
Are they going to be able to do it? Now, again, it's new quarterback coach, new
different
system.
Now because of who Lester. Knows? Yeah.
Like, we need to see where that's going to be.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting more than anything else. I think we're going to see, and you and I touched on this a little bit last week, so I won't go too far down this rabbit hole, Tyler. Sure. Iowa's offense is going to look completely different next season.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about from a personnel standpoint. Yep. That's obviously going to be a part of it. But you're going to see the real Tim Lester offense next season.
Yeah. Well, we got tagged in a tweet that I replied to where some guy was trying to figure out. He's like, well, isn't it maybe something that's wrong with the system if it takes like 3 or 4 semesters to learn? And I responded to it with, it's not that this is going to be a system, because there was a lot of criticism in the past where quarterbacks under Brian and the previous system, they were like, it takes a while for a quarterback to learn the system. And everyone's like, okay, well, can we get a system that isn't hard to learn? And then we hear Coach say yesterday, like, well, we've got all this new terminology in this new West Coast offense. And Lester talking about, well, we've only had 9 weeks. We've got half of the offense in. We've got a lot of progressions and routes and stuff that we haven't put in. And somebody tweeted us, tagged both of us or responded to the post from last week and said, if this is something that's going to take a while, like in today's college football, you just don't get guys for more than 2 or 3 years. If it takes that long to learn a system, is there something maybe wrong with the structure there? And I responded, this isn't necessarily a 2-year process. It's just the fact that we literally have had 3 months to learn this system with all their guys.
Yeah. No, I think that's
when they get,
especially with the significant guys, like from a skill position standpoint, spring didn't do anything for Iowa.
Nothing. Zero. Good for the line.
Good for the line. Great for I think that's why we're seeing the line take a step forward this year. It's because it almost didn't matter who's that quarterback or who's that running back at that point. It's just about, can you learn the playbook and can you block the guys you need to block? Can you be healthy and can you progress? And we've seen that. But as far as a skill position standpoint, like I'm looking at Caleb Brown has put up or shut up here next year. And I'm not going to look too far ahead, but like Reese Vanderzee, I think you're going to see take a significant step forward. Jeff Patterson. Like it's, and you're going to have a more mobile quarterback, assuming Brendan Sullivan's the starter. I'll be surprised if he's not. You're going to have a different style of quarterback. So I think Tim's done a good job based on what they have available. But the comments are completely – like, he was completely right last week. He said, look, we're closer than not, but you're not going to see the real offense until next season.
I'm coming around to the best nugget of the whole press conference, actually, David, and we'll get there in just a second. And I think you probably have an idea of what I'm going to say. And I've already created the thumbnail and the graphic for this podcast based on this quote. And I'm going to get there. Okay. The final response that I gave to that guy on Twitter about like how long it's going to take. For those at home, we've talked about how crazy important bowl prep is. And just getting through an entire season, like they're still working on stuff every single week. It's when they say we get better every week, that shit's real. Bowl prep, massive growth period. And then those 8 weeks before spring, massive growth period mentally and in the weight room. And then spring ball next year is going to be so huge for this offense. Those 15 practices in 2025 spring, at that point, you can say, okay, Lester should have most of his stuff in by then. And then over the summer, they get a few more things in camp. And then really, this thing should be ready to hit the ground like all wheels go next fall. I know you don't want to hear that right now. And which is why I'm going to bring it back. Your question, David, how do you get the passing game? How's the timing working? Do you feel like you're close? KF dropped us with hell of a week for a test drive.
Yep.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Come on now. You got to listen a little bit.
I did hear that. And I was like, I didn't think too much of it. And as I was driving away, I was thinking, there's no way.
What are we test driving?
There's no way.
What are we going to test? So so I immediately jumped to my, I perked up. I literally, you could have seen me perk up. I said, wait a second. Test drive. So we're bringing out some new stuff this week. We're going to try out some new things that we haven't seen. And I think most fans would sit there and be like, gonna need something to win this game. And we are. We absolutely are. I caught that and thought, okay, another week. Lester's
either gonna,
we got a couple new concepts. We got a couple new actions. We got a couple new plays. Something is going to be, has been added to the playbook because KF almost braced for impact when he said this. He goes, hell of a week for a test drive.
That's right,
and I thought, oh my God, KF's nervous because Lester came and brought some stuff to the offense this
week. Just slapped the game plan on his desk.
Dude, hey, guess
like
what?
Like he had the full like clipboard, the whole board and just pinpointing everything together mad scientists.
It was like a little brace for impact moment that I thought like, and the hell of a week for a test drive is an unbelievable quote that I think is just the gold nugget of the whole thing. You always
it's
get
also
one.
Like, what do you have to lose? Like,
nothing.
You're at Ohio State. This is my preseason national champ. It still is my national champion to this point. But
yeah,
Alabama might be sneaking up on my list though, because outside the choke at the end of the game. It was crazy. But no, you're right. I think it would be very interesting if they threw in a bunch of new concepts. And something else I really wanted to bring up, just I know I don't bring in too many of the player interviews in here, but Caleb Johnson's mentality and his willingness to be open in press conferences now when we interview him, like his turnaround has been unbelievable. Like 2 years ago, he did not want to talk to us.
He's matured a lot.
Would not say a word. He's been a fun interview, and he's got a great personality. And I think part of it was, you know, I think a month ago we talked about, you know, why didn't you transfer? And you said, I love my team. Like Coach Betts, like I never think about being anywhere else.
Yep.
And then heading into this game, he said two interesting things. And this is when I really realized Iowa was such a perfect fit for this kid if he truly buys into this mentality. And I think he does based on everything every time I've talked to him. He says, even if Ohio State would have offered me, I probably would not have gone there. I don't want to be a top dog or with the top dogs. I want to beat the top dogs. And I was thinking, okay.
It's a good game to do it.
I don't think it's a revenge game. Luke Lachey doesn't treat it as a revenge game because remember, so a little backstory about Luke Lachey's recruitment, right? And I don't know how much people really know about this. And I can't remember the name of the other tight end. Ohio State had one tight end spot. They were down to two tight ends that they were evaluating. One guy from Arizona and Luke. And remember, Luke's dad is the color commentator for Ohio State Radio.
Yeah.
Ohio State legend. Ohio State said nope and chose the other kid from Arizona over him. And Luke said, I have no hard feelings.
I don't think Luke does have hard feelings. I certainly would have.
Luke's also like the nicest human being alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where he just doesn't carry any animosity. I mean, I did a one-on-one interview with him at Big Ten Media Days because CBS now has the rights to the Big Ten. So we got a chance to talk to him. And I talked to him about me, you know, right when he walked in the room, there was probably 15 people in there, including people like restocking like the water and coolers and all that, Tyler. Luke went around and introduced himself to every single person and said, thank you. Like, talk to them. I'm just like, one, who does that? Like, just who does that? Like, Luke's just genuinely that. But I will say, Luke has a mean streak when it comes to blocking and getting into it. So I think once he steps in the horseshoe, like, if there was a game for Luke to break out, just as far as what we need to see from him for the rest of the year, circle on my little checklist, things I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think this is a good spot to leave it. We'll circle it back to what you said earlier. And you could just kind of look at the 2017 game and how we won that. Take a look at the stats of that game, starting with the Imani Hooker pick. Oh, yep. By the way, he's one of like the better safeties in the league. Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson, Nate Stanley, who is our best quarterback in the last, you know, basically 8 years. Me, elite player, total NFL talent. No, I'm kidding.
Great hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, unbelievable, unbelievable completion percentage and average yards per catch. And it's something that KF says all the time. The best players have to play the best to win these kinds of games, and they have to make plays. And so Lachey has to have his best game of the year. Caleb Johnson has to do what he's been doing. Cade has to have his best game of the year. We need one of those receivers. Maybe, I don't know, Reese had a great first week. We need another performance like that from a receiver outside of Luke Lachey. And then we need to have the defense's best collaborative game of the year, because it's going to be a ton of giving them underneath stuff and not allowing big plays, because this team will mash you with big plays. And so that's the formula.
Here's what I'm looking for, and I'm happy you went there because I wanted to bring this up. Jamari Harris is probably going to be guard Mbuka.
Yeah.
Whoever gets the start at cornerback two, and I think that's going to be Deshaun Lee based on what we heard and based on what we saw last week. If Deshaun Lee wants to lock down that spot for the rest of the year, he has to have the game of his life.
Yeah.
Because Iowa has to defend Jeremiah Smith and limit him. And limit him. You're not stopping him. Like, I've evaluated receivers and all this for, 10 years now. Holy shit, I'm getting old. Jeremiah Smith is one of the most impressive prospects I've ever seen from any position. Like, Micah Parsons is probably the only other one. And I watched him in a camp. I watched him in a camp, Tyler, went up against a 5-star DB, and he just wanted to play wide receiver for fun. Ran right past him, mossed him, 3 touchdowns on 3 throws to him. Just ridiculous. But Jeremiah Smith is not far behind. Like, that dude is a game-changing, dynamic player. If it's Deshaun Lee, if it's, if maybe John Nestor gets in there, or, TJ Hall, whoever gets in there has to make things tough on Jeremiah Smith. Because if you allow Will Howard, I think Will Howard's going to be good to play. Left the game last week a little bit with a rib injury. Those can be easily re-aggravated, so that's something I'm going to keep a close eye on.
We need Aaron Graves to go right from them ribs.
I'll tell you, I think that defensive line is definitely going to try to get a couple of hits on him.
Yeah.
But they're going to go deep, and I think that's going to be Ohio State. I think they're going to run the ball, try to establish that early, but I do not think they're going to take the underneath routes. Just because of what they've seen on film from Iowa so far this season, I think Chip Kelly's going to let that bitch fly, for a lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And why wouldn't you, you have the athletes that you do? So basically, Schulte and Castro are just sitting there going, "All right, well, we're gonna align at 25 deep and just stay over the top as best we can." And like, that is what these guys are up against. Like, I don't think anybody has these grand delusions for this weekend. Like, it is. We are three touchdown dogs for a reason. So we'll see. We got Ike Holt for another week of the Press Review Show. Found a way to make it exciting, even though even though it was a little bit planned on the surface. 45 minutes with David. Thank you guys for listening. We'll have the preview show tomorrow, 5:10, 5 on Friday, and then the Hawks take on the Buckeyes, try and steal one in the shoe. We will talk to you at those times and again next week to recap it all. Thank you, guys. We'll see you then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.